of the Living Geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podcastica here on the Night of the Living Geeks Network. We're going to talk about The Girl Who Died, and we also have a special announcement towards the end of the show, which you are going to want to stay tuned for, trust me. But before we get into all that, I'd like to introduce my good friend Taylor. Taylor, how's it going?
You know, it's going pretty well, dude. I've either gotten completely accustomed to the congestion and the cough, or it's actually starting to go away. I'm not sure which.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll I guess time will tell. Time always tells, as the doctor said in this episode.
Precisely. Yes. Nice call.
Yeah. Excellent. So,
how are you, John?
I'm doing pretty well. We are in the midst of, and I've mentioned this on every podcast that I'm on, we're in the midst of playoff baseball, and the Mets somehow are one of the final four teams, and they're looking pretty good right now. Fingers crossed. I know a lot of people...
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but aren't they up 2-0 against the Cubs, who have been prophesied by one of the greatest time travel movies of all time?
Yes, they are up 2-0 right now on the Chicago Cubs. My favorite thing about Back to the Future 2 is that it's a work of fiction. So
nice.
I hope it continues to be a work of fiction and does not become some sort of weird biographical thing, which it kind of isn't already, because we don't have hoverboards.
No. It's kind of funny because I'm not big into sports myself, but I've got you, who is really, really into the Mets.
Yes.
And the Mets are in the playoffs. I have got a friend who is a huge Cubs fan.
I have a couple.
And so, you know, and so I'm seeing that, and I've got another friend who is actually a pretty big Royals fan.
Oh.
No Blue Jays fan, though. Go fig.
Oh.
And so, like, all peppered through, like, my Facebook feed or my Instagram feed, it'll be like, Mets, Cubs, Royals, Mets, Cubs, Royals, Mets, Cubs. You know, I'm just like, oh my gosh. One of these people is going to be really happy and the rest are going to be really miserable.
Yeah, hopefully this year I will not be the miserable one.
I know.
I'm just happy we're good again, which is nice. But anyhow,
yeah,
that's where I am right now. By the time you listen to this, Game 3 will be happening and I will be a part of the couch again. It's just so stressful.
Fervently biting your nails, right?
Yeah, it's just every stress-related thing you can think of, I'm doing it, so.
I think this is why I'm not into sports. I don't like the stress.
Yeah, don't do it. It's just very stressful for all people involved. So that's totally what's going on with me. But amidst all of that, we had a new Doctor Who episode.
We did.
And if you would like to give the details on that, sir, the floor is yours.
All right. The synopsis for this week, according to me, the Doctor and Clara find themselves helping a bunch of second-string Vikings, it's not a football reference, helping them fight off the war-like, not even war-like, they're war-hungry,
yes,
race called the Mire.
Yes, the Mire.
Who I imagine if they battled a race of like mud creatures, it would be the Muck and the Mire.
Well, we still have a part two. We'll see. No, they're gone.
There you go.
They're way gone, I'm pretty sure.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so space directions. Let's just start off there. I enjoyed the open where it's...
Yeah.
We're like in the midst of something with Clara, and the Doctor's trying to find her, and he's just like, well, what's around you?
Exactly. And she starts calling out different colored stars and nebulas, and you can see him kind of get excited. Like he's going like, oh, yeah, I know where you are.
Yes.
I'm going to just pop right in on top of you. And I love how they do it where the camera's in really close on Clara and she's freaking out. And then all of a sudden, like the camera backs out and boom, she's in the TARDIS.
Yeah. And her helmet's being taken off. That was really cool. I liked how that was shot. And then... He needs to get the goo from the... Was it a Sprite? She was in spider mines, right?
Both times that I watched it, I couldn't quite make out what he was talking about. It sounded like some sort of slug. Well, or whatever it was.
I feel like
he squished it.
Yeah, whatever it was, he squished it. But I'm pretty sure she said, or he said, you'd been working in the spider mines for too long. So maybe it was some sort of a spider thing. I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
Whatever it was, he needed to wipe it off of his shoe. So they land. And I guess Clara's disappointed because he kind of just distracted the bad guys for a while instead of defeating them. Mm-hmm. And I love his line. He says, I'm not actually the police. It just says that on the box.
That was good.
Does she call him a tidal wave? Or he mentions, like, I can't interfere in everything because Ripple's trying to...
Yeah, what she does is, you know, she's like, you keep talking about rules, but you won't tell me what are the rules.
Yes.
And he goes, basically, he's like, you know, we're time travelers. Tread softly. You know, kind of prime directive type stuff. And he talks about ripples versus tidal waves, which I think is going to be a big fixture, I would almost guess, for the rest of the series.
Yeah, definitely. It's his new nickname, the tidal wave.
There you go. The oncoming tidal wave.
And he does not enjoy this nickname at all.
No.
As he does with most of his nicknames. I don't think he really likes any of them. Unless he can use them to his advantage.
Well, that's true. That's true. Although he seemed to tolerate Professor pretty well during the Seventh Doctor's run.
Yes. I don't think I don't think it was a bad thing, that's why.
That's true.
And then,
you know what I noticed?
What's
in
that?
This scene?
Yes.
Is that when Clara comes out of the TARDIS, like the TARDIS door is open and you can very obviously hear the inside of the TARDIS. And she comes out, she closes the door, and it like it's very noticeable. Just, oh, the sound's gone away. The door's closed. Well, duh, of course.
Right.
I just happened to really glom onto that observation.
Huh, I actually did not notice that. I did like when she was coming out of the TARDIS and the door was open and they showed the outside and her coming out. I thought the CG work was very nice on that. It looked cool.
Yeah. Then the sound of metal.
Yes, and then the sound of metal. Not in the mood for Vikings.
Nope.
The Doctor puts on his sonic sunglasses, and then my most favorite character of all takes the glasses off of him and snaps them in two.
I cheered a little bit at that moment. Amber totally cheered at that moment.
You know what's weird, though? Glasses? They still worked. I thought that was very odd.
Even half a glass worked, and it's kind of funny because we were watching it all together, and Kobe made the observation. He's like, dude, I've got like $6, you know, cheap ass gas station sunglasses, and they're more sturdy than that.
Yeah. The Doctor needs to work on his tech. Yes, the glasses are broken, and I loved the just very defeated Clara. We're going with the Vikings. I loved that. That was very, very awesome. And then we get opening credits, which are always lovely. And then we come back and we are headed towards a Viking village. And at this point, I must say, my swoon city forevermore goes to Clara, goes to Clara in the spacesuit because she looked amazing. And
she wears it well.
Yes, she
Let's
does.
Put it that way.
I think there's more, and obviously there is more to it. But I almost feel like there's even more to when the Doctor first sees
Ashilda.
Why do I have it written phonetically.
I saw that in the notes. And I like I really like that kind of opening shot of the village. It all looks kind of as accurate as I've ever seen a Viking village look, so much so that I went, oh, where's Hiccup? Why are there dragons in the sky?
It did. It looked very, very nice. And yeah, I just feel when they're walking up, it almost makes me think like she's someone that we should know from Hulor, that this is their origin story.
If that ultimately plays out,
yeah,
that would be. And I loved the Doctor's line about, you know, he's like, what is it? He's like, you know, we've been time traveling for so long, you know, people think they're having a premonition, but it's just a memory going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, that led me to believe.
A brilliant line.
Yes, and it also led me to believe that, well, then maybe we've seen this person before.
Maybe I now, having gotten through this whole episode at least.
Yeah, maybe it's just like he remembers her, like it's almost probably like a River Song type thing where their timelines are backwards.
Maybe, but I feel like, and I feel like I say this every other week because we're dealing with all these two-parters, because I make these like intuitions off one episode and then it either gets confirmed or destroyed in the next one.
Right.
But no, there's been a lot of buildup. Oh my gosh, Maisie Williams is going to be on Doctor Who, and she did a great job. Don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah, she did.
But there's obviously all sorts of speculation about, oh my God, is she this? Is she that? Is she this person? I'm going to go out and just make a call right now. She's just a Shilda.
Yeah. I can also see that happening too. But you know me.
I don't think she's going to be anybody from Who lore. She may become somebody going forward. I mean, who knows? Maybe another season or two down the road, they'll have her back on in some sort of story and she'll be further along in her timeline.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Right, totally. But I don't think this is somebody that we have seen before and we're getting their origin story. My gut just says that's not the case.
And I after that, I tend to believe what you were saying.
I could be wrong. I will admit that, but I don't think so.
You know me. I just like trying to find random craziness that's happening in this show.
That, I would say, is probably 3/4 of the fun of watching Doctor Who.
Yes, I agree. It is a lot of fun. So the Doctor tries to convince these people that he is Odin in human form. And apparently Odin's sign is a yo-yo.
Yeah, did you see my notes?
No.
Odin, yo-yoden.
Yo-yoden.
I'm just like, that's not even... Okay, good try, Doctor.
Oh... And then I love that he's like, you guys have never seen Odin before. How do you know I'm not Odin? And then giant Odin head appears in the sky.
Yeah, completely like something out of a Terry Gilliam animation in Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yes. The writing in this episode is fantastic, by the way.
Absolutely. Because this episode really kind of has a simple structure to it.
Yeah.
But so many subtlety. There's so many like little comments or little side jokes or just throwaway lines that are really, really good.
Yeah, it's a simple story, but it's very rich with dialogue.
It is.
It's totally. Very, very good. And speaking of another part of this story that is great, David Schofield as Odin, so good.
He does a great job, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's very, very good. I love the look of Odin as well, even though it is a hologram, but good design, Piranha face, which we will get to a little later. It almost looks like half of a Cyclops visor on his face from X-Men.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Really cool, really, really cool design. And he invites everybody to come eat dinner with him, which seems pretty nice.
Up in the halls of Valhalla.
Here are my scary robot creatures to come take you. That seems a little shady. Little shady. And I love the design of those robot piranha thingies, too.
Oh my gosh, yeah, right?
They looked pretty cool. And then we go up into the Valhalla, if you will, and my favorite Viking dies, but at least he did break those glasses before he passed.
And looks as though they are now extracting what monster energy drink with added Viking testosterone.
Yes. Apparently this is how Odin stays alive, by drinking Viking goo.
His reaction when he, you know, chugs that little shot of, 5-hour Viking, it's almost, I mean, it's so, like, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It's so, not just excited.
He's
but
very
it's
satisfied.
Like, just the way he says nectar.
Yes.
Afterwards. And really, if you need that much testosterone, I don't think it's just to be more warlike. I think you literally have a chemical imbalance and you probably should see a physician. That a lack of testosterone, sir, could cause erectile dysfunction issues.
He should go see a doctor.
Absolutely, or not, at least a Viagra commercial.
Not the doctor, like an actual doctor.
Yes, a proper physician.
If only Clara had given him that advice.
And boy, does Clara really step up. And
yes.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen her so doctor-like as when she faces down fake Odin.
Yes, she was delightful.
Oh, such a good scene.
Adding to the Swoon City. And she does it in the spacesuit, so yes, even better. And then, of course, Maisie Williams ruins everything and talks them back into war.
Yep.
She does a fantastic, I'm really scared face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or in my notes, I'm like, oh, Ash, you had one job. Shush. Shush.
Shush. Yeah, she did not shush.
No.
And Odin says, all right, you got a day. I'm going to send my best 10 and you can, I don't care. If you have 100, whatever, we're still going to murder you all, and I'm going to drink your testosterone. Sends him.
I don't think he's got much of that.
True, but sends him back down, and I loved the doctor's reunion with Clara, which was a thumbs up at first, and then he was like, ah, forget it. I'm going to hug you anyway.
Yeah, totally.
And then we find out that they have to go to battle, and we also find out that Ash feels like she's cursed, or she brings bad things happening upon this town.
Yeah.
And the doctor's like, well, you're all doomed. I got to leave. We're going to go. Sorry, bye. And he, I think at this point he asks, has anyone ever held a sword in battle? And he raises his hand and then kind of turns towards Clara, and she has her hands up, and he kind of is like, oh, really? And she's like, yeah. He's like, oh, all right. Yeah, cool.
And at this point, I went, oh, my God, they're the bad news bears of Vikings.
Yes, they are.
And then a few minutes later, I went, no. They're like whatever that movie was with Charlie Sheen and the Cleveland Indians, and I couldn't remember the name of the movie.
Oh, Major League. They're like Major League. Yeah, that's the name of that movie.
Major League. Oh, my God, that's it. Thank you.
That movie is fantastic.
The movie. I should know that.
That movie is a classic.
Yes.
And I believe at this point the doctor hears a baby crying, and we get the return of the doctor knowing how to speak baby. And I have a question for you. Is this baby a poet?
Okay. This baby is incredibly well spoken. Isn't it? Now, I don't know if maybe that actually is a little bit of the, you know, obviously the Viking
right
in the baby. As you know, if you go back and you look at old Viking tales, they are very poetic. They are very kind of floral in their word choice,
right,
says the English maybe. But yeah, that scene, for as silly as it is, going like, okay, the doctor speaks baby. Like Clara at one point goes, oh yeah, the doctor actually speaks baby, and the one Viking who kind of looks like Ray Romano's brother from Everybody Loves Raymond kind of goes, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just like rolled with it. It's like, oh, all right.
Well, I guess that isn't the weirdest thing he's seen today. He did see a giant head in the sky and then giant robots teleport people. So,
yeah.
That could be. That is
very true. But yeah, that whole scene actually with him translating what the baby is saying is actually really kind of moving. And, you know, later Clara and the doctor have this discussion about whether he's going to stick around and kind of, you know, try to train these guys. And then the baby stops crying. And Clara goes, oh, it looks like you made your decision.
Yeah. And she also calls the baby it, which I thought was very odd.
Yeah.
But he corrects her.
Well, you know, if you don't know the gender.
Yeah, true.
And then we get nicknames.
We do get nicknames. Would you like to hear the nicknames?
Yes.
Lofty, Daphne, Noggin the Nog, ZZ
which
Top.
Is great.
Yes, ZZ Top. Heidi, and then he calls somebody else Chuckles, but we don't see them. He says it.
I think Chuckles actually winds up being a Shoulder's dad, if I remember right.
Oh, Chuckles.
I think.
Jeez. I love that he.
I was going to say, I remember Heidi is the one. He's like wearing the helmet, and he's got his eyes closed, and he's like, "Yes, no, I'm really kind of scared at the sight of blood."
Yeah. So this is a ragtag group of farmers that are barely Vikings, and it's not looking too good. And then we get the "I have a duty of care," and this time he said it so I could actually understand it, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't all scotched up.
I think there was something in that scene also with a shielder, and I was like, oh, it's going to be her imagination that saves them because she can think outside the box.
Yes.
And everybody else can't fight their way out of a box, apparently.
No, they cannot. Well, what they can do is light their own town on fire, apparently.
Yes.
That was a great scene, too.
That was a great scene. It was right on the edge of almost being a little too silly, but I loved it.
I liked the only reason it wasn't too silly for me was because there was so much chaos going on and the silliness was explained to us instead of shown.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Duty of care. And then I believe at this point we see Lofty taking his crying baby to go see the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find the electric eels.
Yeah. Was that just a little random or what?
It's just, do they just keep these eels in the barrels? Do they eat them? They didn't really say what they were for. They were just kind of there.
No, they didn't. And previously when the doctor was translating what the baby was saying, the baby was saying something about fire in the water or fire and the water.
Yeah.
And he was a little confused by that at the moment. And, you know, this was a nighttime scene at this point, and a shoulder was in doing, like, I don't know, her little puppet show, for lack of a better term.
Right.
She was doing her storytelling, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the doc comes in and sees her doing that. He's like, oh my God, puppets. This is cool. I love puppets. Puppets are neat. You know?
Which is kind of...
I play with a puppet now. Puppets are cool.
Yes, which is... Well, you mentioned that. That's kind of a callback to Matt Smith's Doctor, where he did actually play with puppets. I can't remember which episode it was, but he did it either like once or twice.
Okay.
And I feel like it was a Christmas special, and I just cannot remember which one it was.
Twitter, tell John which episode it was.
I feel like it was the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe one, or whatever they called it.
Oh, right. I thought it would make sense, wouldn't it?
I feel like it was that one.
There's a bell ringing somewhere back in my head, and it does sound oddly like the cloister bell. I better get that checked. but you can at this point in the episode, you can kind of see the doctor is starting to like piece stuff together. Oh, wait. If we do this and we do this, wait, they're electric eels. I have a plan.
Yeah.
And it all kind of comes together in almost this, like, you know, it wants to be an 80s montage of, like, you know, saving the rec center kind of thing.
Yes. A little bit, but it gets the point across. What's that?
Anyway, the movie Breakin', it was a breakdancing movie in like 1984. And then there was Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Is that where Electric Boogaloo comes from?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
And in one of those movies, they're like trying to save a rec center. So when I made that reference, I just made a Breakin' reference.
Oh, man. Odin and his little guard guys, I don't know what to call them. Oh, the Mire. That's might be what I would want to call them. they come down, and the doctor and the villagers are having a party.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
Which is, and I love the one guy with the rings, just kind of hucking them on to the Mire without them paying attention. And it almost seems like they've almost fooled Odin twice in this, with Clara talking to him and just being like, hey, I'm, you don't want to start a war with my people. And then, but mm-hmm. that goes awry. And then they almost just get them all in one foul swoop, but he hits one of them on the head and... I like the one thing I forgot to mention about the electric eels part was when he says electric eels and then they all just kind of start electrifying the water like all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I'm like, can they do that on command? Like you say electric eels and then they just do that thing.
Try that next time you go to the aquarium.
I'm going to do that and see if it works. So the doctor uses his big old brain to hook up some system that electrocutes the Meyer, and I think it takes out four of them. And then he has a giant magnet that takes their guns and then also removes their helmets. And then we get a good look at the Meyer.
And are they creepy or what?
Well, the second time around, I was watching this and I'm like, that looks really familiar. And I don't know if you ever watched this 90s cartoon, Taylor, but did you ever watch Street Sharks?
I think I remember like knowing of it, but I never watched it. And I saw the picture that you tweeted out this evening. And yeah, it does look a lot like there are some similarities between these two cultures.
So Street Sharks was basically another company, animation company's answer to Ninja Turtles. But instead of turtles, it was sharks. And the main villain was this guy named Dr. Piranha, who actually turns these four brothers into the sharks. And it doesn't actually go as planned because they're like, we don't like you or something. You know, evil plans never go as they are actually planned.
No, they don't tend to. But were there toys of these? I seem to remember toys.
Yes, there were toys of these.
Okay.
So, yes, they look very, very similar to Dr. Piranha. And I was like, oh, man, this is weird. I just thought I would let everyone know that. Then we get the classic line, reversing the polarity of the neutron flow.
And I think he actually even says that, like, oh, dang it. I don't remember the exact line, but it's basically like it's a good thing to say when you don't know exactly what you're doing.
Yes. It's something along the lines of that.
Yeah, that's not the exact words he used, but it was something in that vicinity.
And then Maisie puts on the helmet of one of the Meyer, and kind of she thinks up a monster in her head. And now we know where the giant serpent came from.
Proving me wrong from the previous two-parter.
Yeah, we thought it would be in that one, but it clearly was not. And they scare Odin and the rest of the Meyer. The rest of the Meyer leave him behind, and they record.
Yeah, they're totally terrible.
They record him on an iPhone. I did enjoy the smugness of Clara during this scene.
Yeah.
That
was really good.
Yeah, they were just very smug about it. And the one thing I didn't enjoy, and I feel like you didn't enjoy it either, was did we really need to have the Yakety Sax, the Benny Hill theme in?
It was one of those things where, I mean, this is typical me. I will start peeking at Twitter to see what England thinks of the episode, middle of the day on Saturday, and I start seeing these Yakety Sax reference, and I was like, oh my God, we actually get an episode where in the middle of the episode they play Yakety Sax. Now, I didn't have the context for it. I didn't realize they're like, oh yeah, hey, we shot a video. We're editing it in iMovie right now, and we're going to upload it to the Galactic Porn Hub. I mean, the Galactic Hub. Sorry, wrong hub.
Wrong hub.
Forget I said that. Whoops. I didn't have any of that context. I literally thought in the middle of the episode, Yakety Sax plays. And I was like, what on earth have they done? I got really afraid for this episode.
It was probably like the most wackiest thing that happened in this episode. It almost feels like something always weird and wacky has to happen now.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I think the only thing that would have actually seemed more correct when making the Yakety Sax reference and actually playing the music is if they actually sped up the film by a factor of two.
Yes. That would have been great.
That would have actually made it work. I would have gone like, oh, sure, of course, Yakety Sax. He's running around, and look, there's, you know, a Viking in frilly clothes, and he's chasing after it. That's what Benny Hill would do. But when it's just played at normal speed and there's Yakety Sax, it's not as funny. It doesn't work that way.
No, that's not how the song works at all. No. And they basically blackmail him, and he leaves.
Yeah.
And the doctor gets the other half of his glasses back. And everyone's like, hooray! And then they go to find Maisie Williams, and she dead.
She ash no more.
Yeah, I guess using the suit drained her like a battery, as the doctor said.
Yeah.
Which is sad. And then it's just very weird because we do get the, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry. But he says it as he's like this is different from Tenet. Tenet would stay there and be like, I'm sorry, totally. I'm very sorry. And he would just kind of stand there and take whatever brunt the person he was apologizing to would give him. This doctor kind of runs away, which is very odd. And then we get probably one of the best scenes of Capaldi's run so far.
Abso-frickin-lutely. I mean, by the end of the scene, I was pumping my fist in the air.
You had a way different reaction than I did. I was still happy, but I was like, I'm like, here it is. Here's my first take of getting like super emotional about Capaldi and what he's saying. When he says, I'm the doctor and I save people. I was like, yes, you do. Oh my God.
John needs a hug.
And then when he says, to hell with you, and it echoes through time and space. Now, that could be a problem because that was very much like Tenet in The Water of Mars, where he kind of gets a little too big for the rules and he just does what he wants.
Yeah, that is very, very similar between the two. You are on the nose with that, I think.
And we should not gloss over that scene because it's very important because we figure out why he has that face.
Yes, I'm so glad we get this answered. And I love how they do it, and I love what it means.
It's a great scene. It's just very nice.
We're lost for words.
It was just, and Moffat has a writing credit on this, and it almost feels like he just knocked on the door and said, put this in here somewhere. Is there a part where the doctor loses someone? Okay, put this little scene in there. Okay, bye. And it just leaves. Floats away on his bag of money. I don't know.
To get some scones.
Yeah.
I just want to say scones.
Ugh, such a good scene. So good.
Yeah. Yeah, and even later, I'm jumping ahead and we're going to come back, but even later, he's like, I got emotional and, you know, did just what I wanted to do. And he's like, what, I have a feeling that's really going to come back and haunt me.
Yeah. So he...
So what does he do, John?
He ends up reprogramming the chip that was in the Myers helmet for human beings, and apparently the chip heals them forever, or as long as the chip lasts, and he puts it in her head, and it's almost like he was doing it and then kind of realized, like, this might not be a good idea as I'm doing this, so here's an extra chip, and... He's like, oh, does she have to take this? And he's like, no, it's for somebody else. Like, somebody, she'll know. Like, he's almost like realizing as he's doing it all the things that could be wrong with why he's doing this.
Yeah, I think so, because he really starts like, okay, it's in. And she's like, oh, she'll be unconscious for a day. She'll be up and around in three. Can somebody hop in a boat and take us back to the TARDIS?
Yes.
I'm going to get out of here as fast as I can now.
And then she thanks him, and he's kind of like, don't thank me. I don't know if this is a good idea.
It's okay.
So they're back at they're walking back to the TARDIS, and he tells Clara, like, she's probably going to be immortal she probably can't die. And she's like, oh, I mean, that's not that bad. And he's like, well, why did you give her the other chip? And he says, being immortal, it's another great line. It's like, being immortal isn't living forever if everyone, it's just everyone else dying.
Right. Exactly. That's what the line is. It's not the living forever. It's having to watch everyone else die.
Yes. So she has another chip that she can use if she fancies someone or doesn't want to lose someone, and she can use it on them. I almost feel like in this next episode, it either she tries to use it to save someone and it doesn't work, or she just...
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I almost feel like maybe she uses it on her dad and it doesn't work. So that's why she's all bitter and stuff.
Maybe, because I know much earlier in the episode, she said that, you know, if you know, this village is basically everything to her. If she had to leave it, if she had to leave these people, it would kill her. And now she can't die.
Yeah.
And everyone else around her is going to. And I love at the end of this episode, we get the just this really cool, like, you know, 360 time lapse effect where you can now tell she is kind of like outside time.
Yeah.
Because she's and how her face transforms from the beginning of that scene to the end is just brilliant.
Yes, it's very well done. Very, very awesome. And the Doctor realizes that the prophecy that Davros told him about is true, and it wasn't about Daleks and Time Lords. It was about the human and
things in the mire.
So that's kind of how the episode ends. And of course, it is a two-parter. I really, really liked this episode.
I enjoyed it a lot.
As we said, the writing was great. The scene where we find out why Capaldi has his face, or why he chose that face to remind himself. Everything was great. Maisie Williams was great. Everyone was great in this. It was very well done.
It totally was. And you know, again, it was an episode with a simple structure that kind of had some rich subtleties to it, and I think that formula worked incredibly well this week.
Yes, definitely. And next week we have The Woman Who Lived, and it's odd because, you know, it's a two-parter, and we would usually just tell you, oh, it's written and directed by the same person. It's directed by the same person. It is not written by the same person, which is, I feel, very odd.
It is a tad unusual. I don't know that there's a precedent for it either. Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
It's actually written by Catherine Trigena. I just don't know how to pronounce any names, apparently.
Well, it's England. It's Wales. Wales is notoriously bad for, you know, taking a very simple word and adding 63 letters to it.
She wrote a couple of episodes on Torchwood and Out of Time, Captain Jack Harkness, Meat, and Adam. Those were the four episodes. And Captain Jack Harkness was actually nominated for a Hugo Award in 2008. So there you go.
Very nice.
So that will be next week, but maybe possibly coming up before that, we said we had an announcement. And I believe, Taylor, you should take it away, and yes, go for it.
Oh, boy. Okay, so I'm just going to give a quick bit of backstory just to flesh this out for everyone else.
Yes.
Two episodes ago, we talked about a radio show / podcast, which is not a drama, it's a comedy, called Strangeness in Space. And Sophie Aldred, who played Ace during the Seventh Doctor's run, is one of the is part of the voice talent for this show, and I wanted to give it a shout out because I've listened to both episodes, and John, I'm really hoping you have at this point. And it's really, really funny, and it's really worth listening to. And listeners, I encourage you to go to their website and help support them because they are crowdfunding each episode as they go. Well, one of the tweets after our episode, the Podcastica episode, came out, one of the tweets mentioned her, and so I retweeted it at her, saying, "Hey, if you ever want to come on our show and talk about Doctor Who and promote Strangeness in Space, we'd love to have you on." And I was at work when this happened, but within about an hour, if not less, she was like, "Oh my gosh, yeah, I'd absolutely love to. Here, get in touch with this person and we'll set it up." At which point I more or less, I don't know, melted into a puddle of excitement or fell off my chair or both. But I was more than a bit excited. And so very quickly I got in touch with Claire, her name is, Sophie's producer slash helper slash she does stuff for the Strangeness in Space show. And we started trying to arrange a time and a date that we could spend a little time, hop on Skype, and actually have this interview. A first proper interview with someone from Doctor Who, with an actual celebrity, with, let's be honest, somebody who I think is my Lord Mayor of Swoon City, because she's my companion. I mean, she's that Sylvester is my doctor. Ace is my companion. This was the Doctor Who that I was watching when I was a teenager, when these episodes were still basically new. And so we have arranged a time with the 8-hour difference between California and London. John and I are going to be up really early in a couple of days to sit down and record with Sophie Aldridge, but she's being gracious enough to give us some of her time. Yeah, I'm stoked. So a couple days after you hear this episode, there will be a very special, very exciting, at least for me.
No, this is very exciting.
Where we actually interview Sophie Aldred.
I am smiling from ear to ear. This is the power of podcasting, the power of social media. And yeah, this is very exciting. I'm doing like my Kermit arm flaily thing right now.
Arm flail, absolutely. Yes.
So we will have that up for you. It will be a special episode. You will not have to wait. As soon as we are done recording it, I might, just because it will be early in the morning, I might just put it up as soon as possible.
I won't tell you now.
I know you will not. So that's our announcement. We're excited about that. Look for that very, very soon. And in the meantime, when you're waiting for that, you could go on over to our Facebook page and like us on Facebook. Just search Podcastica and look for some Gallifreyan writing. You can follow us on Twitter, at The Podcastica. You can follow me on Twitter, at Sir Pingle. And you can follow Taylor on Twitter,
at Bus Buddha.
Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Just search Podcastica. Look for that good old Gallifreyan writing in the sky. And rate and review us as well. A huge shout out to the Y-Axes. They do our music. You can follow them on Twitter, at The Y-Axes. You can like their Facebook page, facebook.com/TheY-Axes. And head on over to theyaxes.bandcamp.com. They're also on Spotify, and all of this information will be in the show notes on notlg.com. And while you're at notlg.com, head on over to our store and buy a shirt. We have a cool little Podcastica shirt, and we would appreciate you wearing it on your torso.
Absolutely. And you know what? Odin would wear one, so you should too.
It's very true. We have spoken to him. He will be our next guest. Odin,
absolutely,
the All Father.
I am very cross with you. I am Odin.
His Odin impression was spot on.
That's hilarious.
So join us. Well, join us for that special interview, which will be up soon. But then join us again next week, and we will talk to you then. Bye.
See ya.